Welcome back to this week's edition of Insights into the Weekly Parsha after our Pesach, our Passover recess. I certainly do hope that everybody enjoyed your beautiful Yontif, as we did here at the Boca Jewish Center here in sunny South Florida. Wonderful Yontif shared with us all in our community, and I hope for you as well beyond. This week's Parsha Shir is generously sponsored by our dear friends Michael and Risa Zimmerman in commemoration of the Yahrzeit of Michael's beloved sister Donna Arvelo, Dina Malka Bas Bitzalel Hillel. Her neshama should have an aliyah. The art site is today. This chus of limud haTorah should be a merit for her soul and for the entire family. Thank you so much, Michael and Risa, for your generous sponsorship. Today's Parsha Shir is also generously donated anonymously, as today is Yom HaShoah. It's dedicated to the memory of the 6 million who perished al Kiddush Hashem. And it is likewise sponsored generously in honor of the survivors in the Boca Jewish Center community and in the Boca Jewish community at large. Thank you for your generosity, anonymous sponsor. Today is a very special day. It's a solemn day. It's a day of reflection, a day of remembrance. Yom HaShoah, Tavshin Pei Aleph 5781. We give pause and we reflect. Tonight at the Boca Jewish Center, we will have our annual Yom HaShoah evening of commemoration and reflection and remembrance, a riveting armchair conversation with survivors and children of survivors. That's tonight at 6 p.m. Boca Jewish Center Zoom room. For those of you who would like more information, please contact our shul office. We'll be glad to share that with you. A day of reflection, a day of introspection, a day to remember the Yom HaShoah today, to remember the Holocaust and what it means for us in our lives and how it is that it takes resonance and permanence and inspiration and meaning, giving voice to, not just with our lips, but of course, motivated and animated by the spirit of our heart, of our soul, of how we remember these atrocities, these moments in history that are not in distant past, but are very close to our days for which we live. The stories of survivors, the stories of those who perished, they live on in us and with us and through us, and telling their stories is how their memories continue to endure. And so today's Parsha Shir, the message and our lesson of learning today, is what has tremendous meaning for us today and always, but specifically the resonance for which on this Yom HaShoah Day of Remembrance, Holocaust Memorial Day, it has even greater meaning. So let's begin with our Parsha. You know, Parsha Shemini is a Parsha that we've had 2 weeks to be Marvi the Sedra with the interruption of Yom Tov. Last Shabbos, of course, was Yom Tov, second days of Yom Tov, Shvi Shel Pesach. 2 weeks to be Marvi the Sedra, Shnai Mikra Ve'echad Targum. No excuse not to be able to go through the Parsha and the appropriate commentaries. It's a fascinating Parsha with lots and lots of details, which mean a lot to us in the world of Kashrus and understanding service and ultimately the role of the Kohanim. And Rashi in his commentary explaining very important lessons, he saw those for our lives. But we'll begin this morning learning from the very first pasuk, the first pitch, if you will, Lahavdil. The very first verse in Parsha Shemini tells us that on the day when Aaron and his sons, they began serving officially as Kohanim. Everything was in a preliminary, everything was to prepare for, everything was to get ready for. All of the days that were the spring training of sorts, getting ready for these special days, this time, it's Bayom HaShmini. Today's the eighth day. Now, it's interesting. If this is the first day, why is it that it's called the eighth day? This is a very important principle, that Misha Terach Be'er Shabbos Tochel B'Shabbos, as the Ramchal writes, that Olam HaZeh is Daim L'Prozda B'Fnei Olam HaBa. The Mishnah Pergavos tells us that this world is an antechamber to the next world. The way we prepare for Erev on Erev Shabbos is how we'll eat on Shabbos. Preparation is everything. It's not just independent. It's not just something that is removed from the actual ceremony of the first day or the first game, but the preparation is part of how you will be there on the first day. That's why it's B'Yom HaShmini. Even though it's the first day, it's the eighth day, because the 7 previous days are considered and counted as chashuv, as important, as significant to the first day. The way you practice is the way you play. The way you prepare for something is the way you'll enjoy it. And so therefore, the way we act in Olam HaZeh in this world is how we will have, endure, secure Olam HaBa. The way we prepare for Shabbos, if you don't prepare for Shabbos, you don't have a Shabbos. If you prepare for Shabbos and you cook for Shabbos and you ready your mind and your soul for Shabbos, and then you come into Shabbos and you experience Misha Terach Be'er Shabbos Teichel B'Shabbos, famous Maimar Chazal quoted by the Ramchal, and Misilat Shisharim, the path of the just. So when we understand what this opening pasuk, this opening verse in Parashat Shemini does, it tells us on the day when Aaron, HaKohen and his sons, Uvanov. So now officially, after so much preparation, they officially begin their service as Kohanim, as priests working, learning and serving in the Beis HaMikdash, serving in the temple, serving, of course, in the tabernacle, in the Mishkan, and now they're going to begin their service as Kohanim. So Moshe Rabbeinu, he calls a meeting. He summons them, and he also summons not only the Kohanim, but the leaders, the Zakenim, the elders. And he wants to tell them some very important instructions, some very important rules, some very important, you know, legislation, how it's going to be possible, and what it is they're supposed to do to manifest their role as leaders, as in this case, the Kohanim, and the generation that's going to follow. So this is Moshe Rabbeinu again, who's the Malamed. He's the teacher. He's the Manig. He's the leader, but he's also the Hamalamed. He's the teacher. He's the instructor. He's taking the word of God, and he's passing it to the people. He's teaching it to the people. He's administering with court system of lower level. Then he's administering how the judicial system, how the laws, 613 precepts, the commandments, Tariq mitzvahs are going to be understood, learned, and lived. So what he does, he conveys to them the instructions, how they're supposed to, regarding the special sacrifices, how they're supposed to involve themselves and offer the hakravas hakabonos. What are they supposed to do? The offerings of that day, and ultimately what's going to be the offering for all days and every day. And that's how our pasuk begins, our parsha begins, Vayi Bayom Hashmini. Today is, this is on the eighth day. So what does Moshe do? Kara Moshe le'Aharon u'Levonav. We would think that the pasuk would end there. Moshe calls Aaron, it calls u'Levonav. But here's how the verse continues. He's Kara Moshe le'Aharon u'Levonav u'Lezikne Yisrael. He doesn't just call the Kohanim. He doesn't just call Aaron and his sons who are going to be serving as priests in the Beis HaMikdash, in the tabernacle, and ultimately in the Beis HaMikdash. But he also calls u'Lezikne Yisrael. He also calls the elders of Yisrael. Now, why is it that he calls the elders of Yisrael? What's the significance of the Ziknei Yisrael? What is the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu calls a generation that's the older generation? What's the significance? And of course, how does it play into today, where the generation that was and the generation that is and the generation that will be are intrinsically united and married together? And part of how that happens is through the auspices of Zikaron, of Zecher, of remembrance, of always being mindful. But this is what the Medrash explains. The Medrash in Vayikra Rabbah, Yud Aleph Ches 11:8, cites the great Tana Rabbi Akiva. And the great Tana Rabbi Akiva understands and learns from this pasuk a tremendous amount of lesson significance in the fact that the elders were invited, included in this occasion. It's not random. It's not arbitrary. Nothing in Chumash, nothing in Torah is without explanation. The fact of the matter is that it would seemingly be just have fitting to have Moshe Rabbeinu invite Aaron and his sons. Why is the invite to the Zakenim? It's not to be overlooked. There's a tremendous lesson. Listen to what Rabbi Akiva teaches us. Zok the Medrash. He says, Zikne Yisrael, he says, Amar Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, Nimshalu Yisrael la'of. You know what this means? This is Nimshalu is a moshel. This can be compared to a bird, in the sense that Yisrael is compared to, the Jewish people are compared to a bird. Ma ha'oif hazeh einu poireach b'lo kinofayim. Just as we know, a bird cannot fly without his kinofayim, his wings. So you should know, kach Yisrael ein yecholim la'asos dovar. So too, you should know that this connection, this moshel, this parable, this connectivity is just like a bird cannot fly without its wings. So too, Yisrael, the Jewish people, Ein yecholim la'asos dover. They cannot do anything. Nada, golnisht, efes, zero, chutz mizakenim. Nothing without their elders. And so therefore, to invite elders to a meeting, which seemingly has nothing to do with them, because it has only to do with the service, the karbonos, the mikdash, the mishkan, the tabernacle, the temple, has nothing to do with zakenim. What are you inviting the zakenim? So the answer is that, says Rabbi Akiva, the zakenim have to be at every meeting. They have to participate in every endeavor. There is nothing that the Jewish people can do ever. Ein yecholim la'asos dover. Not some things, nothing. There is nothing that we can do, chutz mizakenim, without their elders, without our generation that comes before. So we have to explain what this means, because it's a foundation, it's a principle. The Medrash understands that this is why we see that in many instances, how the elders were included also in other very critical moments in Bnei Yisrael's history. It goes through a litany of different events. For example, think about when Moshe Rabbeinu was confronting Paro. What's he doing in the beginning of Sefer Shemos? in Perek Gimel Pasuk Tes Zayin 3:16. He's demanding that the people should be released, that the Jewish Hebrews should be released from bondage, from servitude, from slavery. 210 years, it's enough. So what is it? How is this going to take place? So, Lech v'osavta ezikne Yisrael v'amarto lehem Hashem Elokei Avoseichem nire elai Elokei Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov lehemar pokod pokadati eschem, etc. We're familiar with the pasuk. Go and assemble the elders. Why was it essential for Moshe Rabbeinu to assemble the elders? Again, this is on the heels of Rabbi Akiva telling us that there's nothing they could do. From their slavery to their freedom, to their emancipation, to their survival and thriving, everything is predicated on us understanding the role of the Zakenim. Go, says the Kadosh Baruch Hu, assemble the elders. Say to them, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the God of your forefathers appeared to me, Moshe Rabbeinu, to Avram, Isaac, and Jacob. I have remembered, double lotion, what is being done to you in Mitzrayim, and I am going to take you out. This is part of how, the preliminaries of how Moshe Rabbeinu has to go with his entourage to Paro. Let my people go. Why? And how? With the Zakenim. Our nation requires, our people requires wisdom, chachma, das, guidance. We need to have our understanding of where we're supposed to go. In order for us to understand where we have to go, we have to know from where we've been. It is the guidance of our elders. It is the guidance of our Zakenim. Moshe Rabbeinu, assemble the Zakenim. Asafta es zikne Yisrael. Take your elders. Ma'oy fazeinu poreach b'lachinofayim. Kach Yisrael ein yichol nasas davar chutz mizikenim. Nothing without our elders. And this is what we understand. Our nation, our people, our narrative requires chachma, guidance from our elders, our zakenim, as Rabbi Akiva the Great Tana teaches, as a bird needs its wings. This is the connection. Upon whose wings do we fly? Upon the wings of the elders of the zakenim, whose story we learn, whose story we tell, whose lives and legacy we live, whose endurance through our actions, not our words, but our deeds, through the way we give and carry our lives and give this over to our children and our children's children. We ourselves will one day become Zakenim and elders if we're not already to give that over, to live away a legacy that transposes ourselves in time to be able to carry, transposes this to the former and now the immediate and the time for which we live in. This is the wings that we upon which we fly. Now, Reb Chaim Shmulevitz in the Sichas Musar explains, and in other places as well, that there's a tremendous meaning of Rabbi Akiva's comment in this Medrash. He says that birds, if you think about it, it's not the pshat that they can't survive without wings. They can. They can function without wings. They just can't fly. If you ever saw a bird that has its wings clipped, so it says of Chaim Shmulevitz that all other creatures besides birds, right, they survive without flying. And birds could do the same. However, there's a big difference. What's the difference? Birds without their wings, so they lose their unique feature. What is it that about a bird? If you see a bird without its wings, you see that it's not a bird. Oh, shame bird. It's still a bird. It's still alive. It still will survive. But there's a unique feature to a bird. It's what makes a bird a bird. What makes a bird a bird is its wings. And its unique feature about it is it's their defining characteristic. It's what about a bird that makes it a bird. Birds need their wings not to survive. They don't need their wings to survive. Obviously, their survival depends on it in many capacity, but they don't need their wings necessarily to survive, but to realize their purpose, to actualize their unique identity. What makes them unique, what is their defining characteristic, is their wings. That is how they actualize their identity, to realize their purpose, to understand what it is that they're created to do and how they are defined, their unique identity. It says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, he says the same thing. The Klal Yisrael, can survive without, a loyalty to its elders, let's just say, to its ancient tradition, to its heritage. You know, there's so many young people today that they look at the elders as antiquated. They're old. They're outdated. They're not quick with the transmission of technology. They don't know how to quickly WhatsApp or Instagram. They're simply out of touch, and therefore they're happy to just cut ties with. As you old man or old woman are not unique in the sense that you have anything to do with me. You're just an old story, and so therefore ancient tradition. So maybe it could be that we could survive on one hand, but we would lose our unique identity. We would lose who we are. We are a people that's connected to the generation that came before. We are uniquely linked in that chain of our Mesorah. Mesorah is the word that makes it such that we are part of a story. We are The letter in the scroll, as Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks of blessed memory would say, the letter in the scroll in his beautiful book is that we are in and is part of a scroll that has begun, that it was started to be written, that has already been penned, and we ourselves find our unique identity inside that and part of that, and fail to fulfill our mission and reach our destiny. If we lose our unique identity and fail to fulfill our mission and reach our destiny, we're dependent on that. We need that. Maybe you'll physically survive, but you won't have anything that's unique about it. What is dependent upon our traditions, our history, our heritage, our mission, our goals, and our destiny? Can't reach our destiny, says Rechaim Shmulevitz, without understanding where it is that we come from, the lessons that we learn from the generations before, the stories that are told, the legacies that live on in us, and the way we live our lives are inspired exclusively, or at least they should be, by the stories that came before us, not just the physical features. You see somebody looks like their parent or their grandparent. Oh, must be a descendant of this or that person. Sure, that is no doubt one, but a physical definition of one's legacy. But a legacy is defined not by how you look necessarily or only, obviously, but it's also defined by how you live. Our purpose in life, our goal in life, is not to remain on the ground, to live like other people's, right? Our purpose is to soar like a bird. We want to fly. We want to rise above the rest of the world. We want to be a light unto the nation. We're commanded to be mamleches kohanim v'goy kodesh, to live at a morally and a spiritually superior standard. Sometimes people will say, but this is what people do, and this is the crowd that I live in, and these are the standards that the world has already succumbed to. And I'll say, and we'll say, and you should say, and I have to say, we have to all say, those are not standards that we can be satisfied with. We have to want to soar spiritually, S-O-A-R, fly like a bird. And this is the mission that can be achieved only with our wings, only with the ability to fly, our loyalty to our ancient laws, our tradition, our Mesorah. It's told to us by the scholars of each generation, by the Mesorah that's passed on, by the legacy that we have to hold on to endure and to live. These are very important lessons. It's a very important yesod, a very important principle that Rav Chaim Shmulevitz is telling us based on this pasuk, based on this medrash, the medrash of Rabbi Akiva, the wings and the legacy and the connection to those, what those wings mean upon what it is the Jewish people fly. But here's an additional thought. Another thought is the significance of his analogy, Rabbi Akiva, the elders and birds. Think about it. The Zakenim who live lives have spanned more than a single generation, right? I mean, if you see somebody who's elderly, persons in their 80s, their 90s, or older, they've spanned more than just one generation. They've seen so much: electricity, phones, technology. They've seen presidents and transitions. They've seen wars, and they've seen just different economic status and standards. I mean, think about just how a loaf of bread was bought for X number of cents versus how a loaf of bread is today purchased in a store locally. When you talk to an older person, they'll tell you and reminisce and reflect. Elders whose lives have spanned more than one generation, a single generation, have experienced and witnessed shifting trends, drastic changes, huge differences. They benefit of a broader perspective, of a bird's eye view. You know that saying, what's a bird's eye view? 30,000 feet in the air. I'm going to be able to see everything from a bird's eye view. You make a much better decision in life about anything when you're able to see things from a couple steps back. From a bird's eye view, you're able to see the whole story of the world and of life. And so therefore, the younger generation, who sometimes acts cocky, arrogant, know all, be all, do all, they have a relatively limited range of experience. They have a very limited range of exposure, and therefore prone to failing and fail to see the bigger picture, right? As my mother liked to say, eyes in the back of her head, right? The elderly generation, the older generation, the Zakenim, have a bird's eye view of life. They have life experience. The older generation serves as our wings. They're able to see. You might not necessarily understand it. They lift us above here and now, the present, the current context. And even though sometimes we say you can't relate to it, how can you possibly relate to? The answer is that every generation have the things that people think and perceive to be unrelatable to the previous generation. And the answer is it's kedai, it's worthwhile for us that there's a clearer picture of how the world works and how we should act in it, even though you think that because we have technology and they didn't have technology, so therefore, for example, they can't relate to us. The answer is no. Every generation, b'chol dor v'dor, we said in the Pesach, Haggadah each night, omdim aleinu l'chaloseinu, it's no different from the concept. There's only difference as to the manifestation of that concept. But the concept is the same. So there's so much to learn. As the Torah is for us, you know, the idea to apply and observe in every generation under all conditions, we require the perspective of elders. It's not like we think of the Torah as an old, outdated document. We learn, we study, we apply, we appreciate, we understand historical, cultural changes, no doubt. But to the best of our ability to best apply, practice, and preserve the Torah in our generation, and to be able to successfully transmit it to the next generation, we have to rely on the generation that comes before us, which is why today, on Yom HaShoah, today's day of reflection and remembrance, what we do is we give pause to just this idea, the idea of thinking about the story, the experiences, the atrocity, the suffering, the death, the loss, and what that means for those who survived, what it means for the families, children of survivors, what it means as their lives are different, and what it means for us who have the obligation to tell the story, even if you're not a descendant of a survivor. Everybody is a survivor. The Jewish people were at the mercy of Hitler, Yamach Shemo, Vizichro, and his accomplices, all of those who wanted to destroy every single one of us. And so there's an element of that that demands of us to turn to Chumash, to turn to the Bible, to understand why it is that we have to learn about, interview, inculcate, invest ourselves in the story of those who came before us. You know, for anybody who's been to the Yad Vashem Holocaust Memorial Museum in Yerushalayim, the inscription at the entrance, the shrine of the memory of the Holocaust in Jerusalem, contains the following saying that was taken from the writings of one of the great Hasidic masters, Rav Nachman Mibreslov. And it says, and I quote, "In remembrance is the foundation of redemption." In remembrance is the foundation of redemption. Very powerful words, because we know the festival of our freedom, the Geulas Mitzrayim, the redemption from Egypt, which we just celebrated for eight days of Passover, of Pesach, is the celebration of our redemption. But we have to understand that the redemption process just merely begins Pesach. The Geula, the redemption ultimately is the culmination of which we come to Mamad Har Sinai on Shavuos. We accept the Torah. We enter into Eretz Yisrael. We live in the Promised Land with the Beis HaMikdash, the Holy Temple, and we serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chvodo v'atzmo the way we're supposed to. This is so significant. And says the Rav Nachman Mibreslov, in remembrance is the foundation of redemption. There is no foundation. There is no redemption. There is no geula without zechira. Zecher yitzias Mitzrayim, kol amar ba'areza meshubach. Anybody who embellishes the story, as we just have been discussing for 8 days, it's considered praiseworthy. Remembrance is everything. The sheish zechronos, the six remembrances that we say and recite every single day at the end of our davening. We know how important it is, Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim, Bo Bayom, Bo Balayla, in the morning and the evening, and how much Pesach, there is so much remembrance as we remember every day, all the time. It's not just that today is the singular and only day to remember survivors, to remember the story and the atrocity of the Shoah. Every day we do. We just give pause today, and we reconnect ourselves to stories that perhaps sometimes we overlook and perhaps not take seriously enough every other day of the year. And so what we understand that the Torah, especially in the book of Devarim, enjoins us time and again to remember, to not forget, even in his last words, in his parting drushin, his parting speech, and his final address to the Jewish people, which is formulated in poetic style, Parshas Ha'azinu, we know in the end of Sefer Devarim. Moshe Rabbeinu, what does he tell his beloved Bnei Yisrael? What did he tell the people? What did he tell us? Zechor Yemos Olam. Z-Y-O. Zechor Yemos Olam. Binu Shnos Dovador. Sha'alavicha v'yagedcha zikeinecha v'yomrilach. Remember the days of old. Don't just forget what happened in the past. You have to consider Binu Shnos Dovador. You have to consider years of ages past. You have to think about it. Sha'alavicha. Not just the Manishtana once a year, twice a year, if you live in the diaspora. You have to ask your father, v'yogedecha, and he's going to tell you, he's going to have to tell you the answers to your questions. You have to prepare, and you have to know what to answer your children. Zekeinecha v'yomrulach. And not only that, your elders, ask them. Let them tell their story. Let that story resonate deeply. They will tell you, Devarim, Lamid Beis, Zion, Chapter 32, verse number 7. What Moshe Rabbeinu is adding here is that the remembrance of historical facts is not sufficient. It's not enough to just know dates. What is your basic knowledge? When is the date for Pesach, the date for Shavuos, the date for Sukkot? When is Rosh Hashanah? When is Yom Kippur? Dates, historical facts are essential, but it's not all. That's all that's necessary. There's way more that's necessary. What Moshe Rabbeinu is adding here is that the remembrance of historical facts is not enough. It's not sufficient. Zelo maspik, it's not enough. A person has to also consider. A person has to contemplate. Zechor means you have to really think about the things that happened previously and prior in order to understand the significance of them, the events as they took place, the people who lived in those events, what those events meant to them, what they meant to their children, what they mean to us. What does it mean to be a Jew in the year 5781? The rise of anti-Semitism, everybody here understands and knows what that is, and maybe even in ways does not know to what extent it is. Famously, the pasuk tells us that when Yaakov Avinu was re-meeting with Esav, his brother, the verse tells us that he should beware of Esav Achi, his brother Esav. Commentaries ask, everybody knows that Esav was his brother. Why does the Torah tell us that it's Esav, his brother Esav? Because commentaries explain, the Mefarshim teach us, that Esav, the brother, he comes to us in forms not one way, but perhaps in two ways. The Esav that everybody knows is the enemy. Everybody knows who your enemy is. Everybody knows the identified, proclaiming anti-Semite, right? Esav is Soina es Yaakov. He wants to destroy Yaakov. He wants the demise of the Jewish people. But Echav, the brother is the one who's unsuspecting. The brother is the person you bring close, the person who you think is your friend, the person who you believe is your colleague, your comrade, the person you share an office with, who you believed was your confidant. And when all is said and done at the end of the day, if you were to hear a private recording of how they feel about Jews, about you, about how much you're earning or how much accomplishments you're having affects them because you're a Yehudi, because you're a Jew, you have to understand that there's a very big difference. Those that are the Achiv, those that are the Esav, they are in multiple forms. It's not, as the Chidah writes, only the sword, but also with the smile, that one might be at the mercy of what that is. Therefore, you have to contemplate. You have to be Zohar, Yemais Olam. Tav Shin Pei Aleph, a year that we find ourselves reflecting and remembering an event that took place. There are children today that are being raised denying the Holocaust, not in our communities, denying Holocaust, saying that this historical event didn't happen. It happened. It was real. It was visceral. Lives were lost. 6 million Jews perished. Think about the descendants of those 6 million Jews. 600 million families, communities, generations, do re doros lost the hand of the Nazis. Yemach shemam v'zichram, they should be obliterated and they should be decimated, their memories. Zechor yemos olam, sha'al avichav yaged chav zekeinechav yemrilach, says Moshe Rabbeinu, consider, contemplate, think about, understand the significance. Today is Yom HaShoah. And so therefore, on today's day of Holocaust remembrance, we think, we reflect, we give pause. We light candles, not only in the physical sense, but in our hearts to reignite, to be inspired and uplifted by their stories and realize the holy and awesome responsibility that we have to live our lives in such a way. I'm mindful of what was the famous opening remarks at the Eichmann Yimach Shemo trial of the then Attorney General of the State of Israel in April 1961. For those of you who remember, Gideon Hausner, he said in a very, very powerful opening remarks, and this is really to all of us, we have to remember, he said, and I quote, "When I stand before you here, judges of Israel, to lead the prosecution of Adolf Eichmann, I am not standing alone. With me are 6 million accusers, but they cannot rise to their feet and point an accusing finger towards them who sits in the dock and cry, I accuse, for their ashes are piled up on the hills of Auschwitz. They are piled in the fields of Treblinka and are strewn in the forests of Poland. Their graves are scattered throughout the length and the breadth of Europe. Their blood cries out, but their voice is not heard. And so therefore, I will be their spokesman. I will be their one to be their voice. And in their name, I will unfold the awesome indictment." Very, very powerful words. Gideon Hausner, April 1961, Attorney General, State of Israel. So powerful to think about the voice that we have to be, the inspiration that we have to feel, the legacy that we have to carry and endure, to understand the sacrifice, the desire to be connected to Torah and mitzvot. We take for granted the luxuries, the abilities to learn even, just simple, basic, going to the bookshelf, taking a Gemara, opening it up, how many shiurim are available online, how many opportunities to study the folio, daily folio of Daf Hayomi. We take for granted even something like that, taking a sitter from the bookshelf to be able to pray from my own home, the ability to learn Torah. We take for granted, listen to this unbelievable story. Rabbi Pesach Kron, echad me'a rabbanim, one of my rebbeim, a rebbe, of course, of Klal Yisrael, shares beautiful stories and Mamari Chazal to light the soul of the Jewish people. So at the last Siyam Hashas, he shared an unbelievable story, an incredible story about just how much we are to value learning, how much to value a Gemara. So he explained the following. Just right before the actual Siyam Hashas, the last one, this is actually the last big, big, super mega gathering before Corona, January 1st, 2020. As we all know, shortly thereafter, coronavirus hits. And this was nearly 100,000 assembled at MetLife Stadium and other stadiums around the world. But at this one, where I myself personally attended with my family. So this was an extraordinary event. And of course, Rabbi Kron captures the essence like only he can. He shared right before the scene, an unbelievable. So he said that after the Second World War, there was a Rav by the name of Rav Aaron Paperman. Rabbi Aaron Paperman, a former Talmud, a former disciple of Telz Yeshiva. So he became a chaplain with the United States Army. And he went to go to the displaced persons camps, the DP camps, to be able to help the hundreds of people, thousands of people. Well, Nebuch came out of the concentration camps. Now their lives were lost. Families had passed away in the most horrific and most tragic of ways. Now they're finding themselves unknowing where they're to go. They're in these DP camps. Having survived the concentration camps, people would ask him for clothing. They would ask him for medication. They would ask him for food. They would ask him for anything that they could to get their hands on. Now, one man, he said, on one afternoon, there was a fellow by the name of Rav Yaakov Hirsch Seeger. So his name is Rav Yaakov Hirsch. He came to him and he said, "Chaplain, I need something from you." He says, "Sure, how can I help you?" He says, "Please, can you get me above a comma?" Above a comma, for those of you who don't know, is a tractate, is a Masechta in Shas. It's a full, it's pages of Gemara. It's our Mesorah, it's our Torah Baal Peh, it's our oral law. It's a Masechta, a Gemara. Above a comma, he says, "Chaplain, get me please above a comma." Rabbi Paperman said, "Oh, what?" So Rabbi Yaakov Hirsch said to him, "Chaplain, have you never heard of above a comma? Have you never heard of a Gemara before?" He says, "Of course I know what a Gemara is. Of course I know what above a comma is, but I'm not here to give out above a commas. I'm here to rehabilitate people. You need medication, you need clothing, you need food. What do you need? That's what I'm here to do. I'm here to help you survive physically. I'm here to give you what you need to help you rehabilitate." Listen to what he said to the chaplain. He said, "Chaplain," this is Rabbi Yaakov Hirsch, he says, "Listen to me, chaplain. 4 years ago, I was in my kitchen. I was living in Hungary and I was learning Ablad Gemara. I was learning the Gemara of Bava Kama, and the Nazis, Yimach Shemom V'Zichram, they came and they took me away. And I haven't seen a Halakha Gemara in 4 years. You know what it is for a Yid to be without a Gemara for 4 years? I need a Gemara. I want to see those letters. I need to see those letters. I want to learn a Mishnah. I want to learn a Braisa. I want to handle an Achakira, Machlokes Rashi Tosfos. I need to hold a Masecht in my hand. Please, chaplain, please, if there's only one thing you can possibly give me please a Gemara. I need a Talmud. I need a Gemara." The nourishment of the soul, the stories, there's so many stories, too many. Of course, we could talk all day, tomorrow, all week, all next week, all month, all year. Of the so many stories that are to inspire us not to take for granted what we have, to listen to the survival stories, what they yearned for, what their connection was. Please, chaplain, just give me a Gemara. Well, think about that the next time we have an opportunity to learn, which is today, which is tomorrow, which is the next day, not to push it off and not to ever stop appreciating what it means to take a Gemara, to want a Gemara, to know what it does to nourish your soul. It fills up your not just your body, but your soul, your neshama. We're not just a guf, we're a soul. It's a chumash. It's a tehillim. It's a sefer that is uplifting in any way, shape, or form. I want to hold that in my hand. I want to be inspired. These are the stories of the people that came before us, the legacy that we ourselves have to hold on to. One final thought, one final story. We know famously, you know, Simon Wiesenthal, the famous Nazi hunter. We had 2 years ago this chus, the merit to have Rabbi Marvin Heyer from the Simon Wiesenthal Center, erudite, manhig, leader, spokesman on behalf of the Jewish people, Holocaust, and Museum of Tolerance. A very riveting Shabbos, very special time spent together. Of course, his connection to Simon Wiesenthal, the story that he tells and shared with it to me and to us, also famous and well documented. He was Simon Wiesenthal, as you know, the famous Nazi hunter. So he once spoke at a conference of European Rabbanim in Bratislava, Slovakia. He spoke to them. Now, you have to understand that when he was there and who he was speaking to, he wanted to share with them a very important foundation, a principle that would be carryable to the constituents that these Rabbanim would be able to share with. So the rabbis, the Rabbanim at the time, they came and they presented Rabbi Simon Wiesenthal, he was 91 years old at the time, with an award. They gave him something that he should have as a token of their deep appreciation for his life's work, for his legacy, for himself. See, he was very, very shaken, visibly very moved, and he got up and he shared with them the following story. And this story is unbelievable to think about a Gemara, to think about a sitter. Listen to this story, well known, but so worth repeating for those certainly who have never heard it before. He said it was Mauthausen. He was in Mauthausen, and it was right after liberation, right after they had already been liberated. Now, the camp, it's not like they were able to quickly get up and go to DP camps. Some of them had to remain for quite some considerable amount of time. At the time, the camp was visited by a very, very special Rav by the name of Rabbi Eliezer Silver. He was the head of the Agudas HaRabbanim, the Union of Orthodox Rabbis of North America. If you have never heard of him, Google and learn about this great, great sage and tremendous leader of the Jewish people during that very pivotal and transformative time, Rabbi Eliezer Silver. So he was on a mission, he was there to offer aid and comfort to survivors. So he also organized a special service, and he invited Simon Wiesenthal to join in the other people, you know, the other survivors in tefillah. Simon Wiesenthal said to this group of Rabbanim, he said, I'm not going to go. He said, thank you, Rabbi, I'm not going to go, and he explained why. So he said, listen to this, what he tells this Rabbi Silver. He says, in the camp, Simon says to him, there was one religious man, one religious Jew, who somehow managed to smuggle in a sitter, a prayer book. Somehow, you hear these unbelievable stories of what people were able to smuggle, what they were able to bring. He says there was one religious man who was able to somehow bring a sitter, a prayer book. At first, he said, I was very much in great admiration. I admired this man greatly for his courage, that he risked his life in order to bring a sitter so he should be able to daven in Gehenna, in the worst of worst places. But then he said, and this is why I can't pray with you. He says, the next day I realized to my horror that this man was renting out his sitter to people in exchange for food. People were giving him their last piece of bread for a few minutes with the prayer book, with the few minutes to daven with the sitter. And he said, this man who was very, very thin and emaciated when the whole thing started was soon eating so much that he died before everyone else. His system simply couldn't handle it. He said, if this is how religious Jews behave, if this is what they're going to do, take another person's bread in exchange for the sitter, if this is how religious Jews behave, I want to have nothing to do with a prayer book. I want to have nothing to do with a sitter. Zero garnish. I simply cannot and will not join you in your prayer service. Thank you, Rabbi, but no thank you. He says, Simon, the following. He walked away, turned to walk away, and as he was about to walk away from Rabbi Silver, listen to this unbelievable, mama's genius, Rabbi Silver touches him on the shoulder, and he gently said to him in Yiddish, you're a silly man. Why do you look at the Jew who used his sitter to take food out of starving people's mouths? Why don't you look at the many, many, many Jews who gave up their last piece of bread in order to be able to use a sitter? That's faith. That's emuna. That's the true power of the sitter. The sitter gives with its beautiful words, Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. The power of the words in the Siddur is our faith, our connection, our dveikus to the Ribono Shel Olam. Think about those Jews who gave up their last piece of bread in order to use a Siddur that they should be able to refine, reconnect to their faith. The power of a Siddur. Rabbi Silver then embraced him. He hugged him. Said Simon Wiesenthal, I went to the service the next day and I was changed forever. It's all a matter of perspective. Sure, we have so many excuses. We make excuses. Maybe we've even earned some excuses. But when it comes to carrying a legacy, there are no excuses. As Gideon Hausner said so profoundly and so eloquently, that as he was their spokesman, so are we. To unfold the awesome indictment and to be able to uphold the legacy of our Mesorah, to appreciate a Gemara, to appreciate a Siddur, to appreciate the legacy, to appreciate the connection that we have with our Father in heaven. And when we preserve the memory of those who came before us, we will understand that this Bayom HaShmini comes on this day of inauguration, Aaron Ulavanov, it includes the Zikne Yisrael. We understand that Rabbi Akiva teaches us, Yisrael Ein Yecholim La'asayz Davar Chutz Mizikeinim, there's nothing we can do without the Zikeinim. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Leich V'yosavte Zikne Yisrael V'yamarta Aleim Hashem Elokei Avisechem Nira Eilai Elokei Avraham Yitzchak V'Yaakov, assemble the elders. They could have survived without Sons of Chaim Shmulevitz. But a bird loses their unique feature, their defining characteristic. What realizing of our purpose is, actualizing our truest, our identity, a bird's eye view of understanding what they have in the large totality of a picture, a generation that is younger, that is less mature, relies on and leans on understanding as the inscription in remembrance. Is the foundation of Geula, is the foundation of remembrance. Zechor Yemos Olam, Binu Shnos Dor Vador, Sho'al Avicha V'Yagedcha. Here we go, Zekeinecha, V'Yomru Lach. Not merely to remember historical facts. That's not sufficient. Amar Moshe Rabbeinu Lanu, to us, a person has to also consider, to contemplate all of those facts, to imbue, to infuse, to live with, in order to understand the significance of them today and every day. May the memory of those who perished, who died al Kiddush Hashem, be forever in us and live on and always truthfully and faithfully endure in us all. Am Yisrael Chai, B'nai Yisrael Chai, Eretz Yisrael Chai, and may the survivors have long lives, and may we do what we must to preserve the legacy and the memory on this day and on every day. Thank you so much to our generous sponsors. I remind everybody once again tonight at 6 p.m., both live and via Zoom, our Boca Jewish Center Evening of Holocaust Remembrance, where we will hear the stories of survivors and children of survivors in an armchair conversation and interview to be uplifted and inspired together. I hope to see you there in person or in Zoom. And with that, I wish everybody a beautiful Thursday. A rest of your week should be filled with inspiration and a wonderful, beautiful, uplifted Shabbos Kodesh. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for learning together. Have a blessed day.